When I first came up here about 15 years ago, I remember watching the stars and taking nature hikes. And I used to try to memorize all the constellations and where they were. Then when I became 18, I started working for Bank of America. And I started getting more and more into communications and satellite and communications technology. My father used to always tease me because I used to always make more money than he did. And then as time went on, I started working for an observatory. And I was working with Lawrence Livermore Laboratories on a project that was dealing with atmospheric research. And what that was doing was studying space and the atmosphere and those types of things. Really, the experiment was to after nuclear fallout, to study the atmosphere and see what was going on. Then I started working for the stock market, where they had a lot of satellites, a lot of communications equipment and gear. Today I still install telecommunications networks. If you need to run something from Chicago to New York, I can do that for you. But the question really is that whether space will still be used for peaceful purposes, for example, communication satellites, biological experiments, for example, the space shuttle program taking teachers into space. I remember on the other night, a friend of mine and I were watching a satellite go overhead, and today, 10 years ago, I would have said, wow, that's a beautiful sight. But now I look at that and I say, well, is that a peaceful satellite, or is that a surveillance satellite that's coming overhead?
You know, only state surveillance satellite.
That's right, who was? Because I couldn't see the markings from this far away. So that's the question, peace or war? What really started the space race was in the 1950s when the first satellite was put up by the Russians, Sputnik. I think some of you may remember that.
Some of us were just fairly born.
and then during the 1960s, for example, the first astronaut was able to make a revolution around the Earth. And then Kennedy made his famous speech, "We will go forth into space and pursue space for peaceful purposes." So that, during the 1960s, really marked the beginning of the space race. Okay. In 1966, what happened was that now there was an agreement between nations that we will try to work together, because there could be potential goods there in space. As I mentioned before, medicines and biology, things like that. Then we have in 1972, just to give you a history, in 1972, the Outer Space Treaty was signed between Nixon and Brezhnev, that said, okay, we'll work together in space. However, now in 1983, March 23rd, Reagan has pushed forth the High Frontier SDI Star Wars program. So from the beginning of what space was thought out to be peace has turned into war. Now let's talk a little bit about the motivation. Okay. why orientate space towards war? There is a famous quote that says, "What we do in outer space will be a mirror image of our inner space." So whether or not we are, whether the war takes place here or out on the heavens, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. There is also a good book, I recommend you pick it up, by Gerald Finsberg. It's called The Prometheus Project. Prometheus means foresight, taking a look at what direction we're really going with respect to the space race. And I'll read you a passage from here. And again, we'll talk about it. Again, it'll be a lot of information, but it'll give us a chance at the end to talk and see where we're really going. Okay, it's entitled World-Shaking Decisions. The critical necessity of a discussion of long-term goals is a result of two factors: the growing interdependence of different parts of the world, society, and the rapid development of technology. The combination of these produces a situation in which actions and decisions by a small group can produce large-scale, irreversible effects that were neither expected nor desired by the initiators. For example, the nuclear effect of a fallout, they really didn't know that this was going to happen, but yet they went forth and made the effort anyway. Okay. The Strategic Defense Initiative, what is it? Why, and why go into space? Let's talk a little bit about the different things that we have there. And then we'll take a look at what they really are, what they really do. There is inside of the SDI project that Reagan has proposed, there's a group of satellites called DEAD. Stands for directed energy and destructive weapons in space. And under this, under DEAD, there is a set of weapons called HEL, okay, or high energy laser equipment. Okay. In the beginning of the And then again, they have different, more of these underneath each one of these. Another ones under these destructive weapons are anti-satellite devices that are used to destroy satellites overhead and do surveillance. Under these high-energy laser equipment, they have different types of energy, destruction devices, and these are the primary ones, and these are the ones that are out there today that they're thinking about. One of them is called a pellet. What it consists of is a little pellet about the size of a grain of sand, where they hurtle it at very, very high velocities, and you try to hit that satellite and knock it out of orbit with a little bit of pellet. And the accuracy for that has to be tremendous. It's like hitting a nickel.
They're also dealing with a cloud of this kind of like a shotgun blast too.
That's right. Also e-beam weapons or lightning weapons. Okay. what proportion do we have? I mean, again, you know, again, I think you get the idea that there's a whole different types of, there are laser weapons, there are kinetic weapons, there are all of these types of things that are going on. The proportion, what proportion is being spent for war? And what proportion today is being spent for peace? 3/4 of today's budget in NASA is dedicated directly towards developing war, like weapons. And only 25% is for the further, for example, mounting a telescope in space. That's only 25% of the budget. Major sort of man,
No.
it doesn't make you mad. To explain.
Okay, there are differences. Now, a system such as this is not designed to wage war. It's designed to defend. And there's some definitions there that are different. These orbital systems are not designed to train on cities and unleash their capabilities.
Yes, but still the ultimate plane, the ultimate platform is Earth. For example, like Talon Ruby, which will be associated with the space station, will direct a space station with a set of mirrors and try to bounce lasers and try to hit planes out of the sky. I mean, that's people.
Mm-hmm. If it can be determined that these targets are threatening.
Like in the Persian Gulf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, like in the Persian Gulf. Okay, let's give an example of
like
why this technology... Let's give you an example of why this technology that I believe, the way I see it, really won't work.
Oh, I know why it won't work.
Well?
It's too expensive. We don't have a system that can put it up right now. And probably we'll probably break our budget trying to develop it.
That's right. The Reagan has asked for $33 billion.
That's
just in research.
That's for planning.
Mm-hmm. I give another reason why I say it will not work. And we had a real hard lesson to learn in the tragedy of the last space shuttle that went up, for which the astronauts died. Being one involved in technology as an electrician, I see systems every day. And people trying to make something out of nothing to take the place of what's already there, and that is God and His Spirit. To the extent that the more extravagant and complex that you get, the more likely something is going to go wrong. Another example is I used to work in a power plant in Wisconsin. They had a system where if the union workers went on strike, then the non-union workers could run the whole power plant from inside the control room. They could dump a train of coal by pushing the buttons, bring that coal into the crushers by the push of the buttons, have that coal be pushed into the power plant by the push of the buttons, and have the boiler burn that coal to produce the electricity by a push of buttons. It never worked on the day that it was installed because of the complexity of the situation. The more and more complex you try to make things, the more and more likely that it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And a system like this, it is so complex, it will not work because you're asking to be like God, to make everything work just out of your own imagination, and that will never happen. And that's the lesson he's showing.
Okay, Prometheus, by the way, was a benefactor of mankind and a defender against the gods. That's stories behind Prometheus. Yes, $133 billion for this project that will last till 1993 really doesn't seem to mean like it's a wise spent use of resources. You know, another thing that you'll find that's sort of fascinating, you know, the space shuttle? Space shuttle by it was a quote by James Beggs in 1903, that the space shuttle, before it was built, was set to Air Force maneuverability standards. Now, what does that mean? In the 1990s, Reagan plans, the administration plans, to build 6 more space shuttles, at least. That will make routine trips back and forth to space. And again, 3/4 of the time, 3/4 of the money spent will be spent for national security or military purposes. Now, what does this sound like? What does this sound like to have a space station in space and having these space planes fly back and forth to the space station, armed?
It doesn't sound like that to me. They could be armed.
Why not?
It's in violation of a national, international treaty, however.
That's right, the ABM treaty. It's that says.
But the Russians have already violated that with radar arrays. The Russians are already blinding satellites for us with laser weaponry.
So because they did wrong, it's okay for us to do wrong.
No, what I'm saying is that because they do wrong doesn't mean that we are going to. There's lots of opportunities for us to do wrong.
It's not. See, sometimes.
And what we do is certainly not going to. We can't control what the Russians do. I mean, it is admirable to say and advocate that we should not be doing this, but we have no control over the Russians, unfortunately. It's admirable that we're doing that, and things have worked and have had an influence on our government and our military systems, but we don't know what the Russians are going to do. And just because we don't, in reverse of that, just because we don't do it, doesn't mean the Russians aren't going to. If we say, well, we're gonna stop doing all this, the Russians are really think they're gonna jump in and say, that's great, we're gonna do it too.
No, let's say that they don't say that. Let's say we say we're gonna stop doing it, and let's say the Russians gonna keep on doing it. Does that give us an excuse to protect ourselves against what someone else might do?
What happened to that old saying?
Well, put a fence around swimming pools so someone doesn't fall.
That's true. That's true. We put fences around our swimming pools because parents will not take the time to sit out there in front of that pool and watch their kids. Mm-hmm. They put fences around the swimming pool because adults who know what that pool can do to an ignorant or a stupid person, but is unwilling to take the responsibility to see that that doesn't happen, they put up a fence to protect themselves of their own ignorance and stupidity. And that same type of fence is what leads us into the things that this Rainbow Week was talking about. Racism, prejudice, sexism, ageism, and all those other things which blinds us from our true spirit. And if we were of the true spirit, we wouldn't care what someone else was doing. For instance, lots of us know that it's on the rain sometimes. Not every one of us know when we see the clouds coming that we have to carry an umbrella. The only ones carrying the umbrellas are those who are afraid of getting wet. There are a lot of people that walk around in the rain because they like to get wet. But in their soakiness of wetness, it doesn't bother them because in their spirit they are dry.
I don't think in terms in those kinds of terms.
That's
and
true.
I'm not saying that nobody should or could.
No, but what I'm hearing from you is that, and I guess that you, by the way you're talking, that you have some dealings in technology to know these type of things.
You're in the military.
I'm part of the military industrial complex.
That's right.
Okay, whatever it is. Whatever it is. But it's time that we as earth creatures, do you see a bird carry an umbrella?
No, they seek shelter.
Exactly, they seek shelter, but do you ever see a bird fly in the rain? course you have. Of course you have. So why doesn't that bird, why don't that stupid ignorant bird seek shelter?
I see it sitting right out in the rain.
Exactly they do. Exactly they do. But we, as humans, supposedly being the best of all the animals because of our higher intelligence, keep thinking of ways to precipitate what God has in line for us.
But does God make decisions that the Russians make?
Are you trying to say that God is not living inside the Russians?
No, I'm trying to say that there is a certain irrationality among all people.
And among God himself and herself also. There's a certain definite irrationality amongst the existence of God. And part of that irrationality is us.
Okay. Let's talk about the treaties.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, let's talk about the treaties. You mentioned that, okay, treaties are broken all the time. Is that what I understand?
They have been, yes.
They have been. Okay. All the treaties that we have right now concerning SDI, Star Wars program, says that there will be no weapons of mass destruction in space. Period. Mm-hmm. But yet, there are weapons.
I don't know where the line could be drawn with mass destruction.
That's right.
That's a hard line.
That's right. And especially, for example, the High Frontier proposal, which proposed that there were 432 satellites, ASAT, and 40 to 50 non-nuclear types of devices. Okay. I guess what they're trying to get away from is that having a nuclear satellite sitting up there in space and all of a sudden just fall to Earth.
That's happened too.
Now, the Air Force, just by the way, with respect to the space shuttle, make you aware, the Air Force has opened up a new division. It's called the Air Force Space Division, or Space Force.
It's been in existence for a long time.
Oh, now it has, yes. But most people aren't aware that this is happening, that this is going on, that there has been an Air Force Space Division formed. And the feeling and the space shuttle operations, for example, have been taken over by Lockheed, which again tells you something about the intentions to get, as for example James Begg said, away from the big dumb booster concept to something that is more productive. Really, what he says, more destructive than productive. Okay. Any comments about that? What you want?
I just wonder what you mean by Air Force specifications. Does that mean the ability to land in an Air Force airstrip, which they already do, or what do you mean by Air Force specifications?
Well, the original space shuttle design, as you may know, was to just go directly into space and then back down, and then be able to, for example, if it missed, you know, something went wrong and it missed its touchdown, it could actually turn around and go back again. But the actual pitch and roll of the shuttle, again, was mirrored after that. They had an influence on the way that it was supposed to be designed. I mean, if it was just
aeronautical engineering.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I guess that these are some of the things that we have to be aware of. That's going on. I mean, the great big push now for money that's being spent in this area. I would see that there should be greater resistance instead of just by a few. There should be more.
Do you have a silophone?
But there's nothing that we can do to like curtail how much money they spend on war versus how much money they spend on peace.
I say there is.
No, there's not, because they don't let the body, the people vote on that. That's something
true.
That
well, the head of the state.
But you know, it's not just one. It's not just a single president or a single person in Washington that's involved.
It's Congress.
It's everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I agree with just what he says. It's each one of us as individuals that allows those systems to be in place, because through our tax dollars, that supports that industry. And if we were serious about not having that industry in place, I have said it again, as individuals, stop paying taxes. Because it is your tax dollars that pay for that stuff without you having a decision in the process. And what did that line say long time ago? One man, one vote. If you can't vote for how your tax dollars is going to be used constructively, stop paying the tax dollars. But the reason why we don't, we're afraid that we're going to lose our house. We're going to lose our car. People's not going to like us because now we're not American. We're commons.
Well, and I think maybe politics.
I'm
sure it's a naive statement, plays a very large part in all of these things.
Sure it does. Bush gave his. Not Bush, but what's the other guy running?
Dukakis.
Okay, no. Who's the Republican? Bush? Let's see how much I know about politics. That's my interest in. The Republican candidate for president and his speech at the convention got a standing ovation when he said, no, I'm not going to raise taxes, but we are definitely going to push Star Wars.
I think for myself, I don't understand politics and what politicians are saying and what they're really meaning. And when we're talking about, you know, voting for our representative, I'm not sure I always know that the person I vote for is going to actually implement what it is I believe in. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of frustrating for me. I just kind of wish I guess Chuck's helped build a deck right now, but he says he is a little more into understanding politics, and I think that's he could offer a little bit more on what that is. Sometimes, not on the negative sense, but certainly we should understand politics more to understand why some of these things are happening, maybe.
That's true, but let me give another example that we see in the Bible. When Jesus was hanging on the cross, all he had to do was call out for his Father to come save him, and he would have. And when he would have saved his son, that would have meant our destruction. But he didn't. And there's a powerful lesson in that. He, as an individual, just like we as individuals, did not get in the way of God's total scheme of things, to call it loosely. And he had every power to do that, just as we do. Just as we do. And that's what we're doing. We're getting away of God's scheme of things. We're not calling for the board anymore. We're calling for the bank whenever we get into trouble. When husband or wives get into trouble, they don't go to the church and pray about it. They call the bank and make sure that all the accounts is in one another's names. Right? They make sure that I got mine, now you get yours.
Okay. Well, let's turn the coin now. Let's be nice and positive, and let's say that. Okay, let's say that we really do need something like this. Okay,
yeah.
Above our heads.
The deliverance of the Holy Spirit, which is certainly above our heads.
Okay, let's say that we really do need this. We really do. We really do have this basic desire to go forth with technology now that we can do it. Okay. A lot of times it's not necessarily the direction that technology is advancing, but the rate at which it's advancing. Okay. But in this particular case, it's both the direction and the rate. Okay. And that's what's also causing a future type of shock. Okay. If the system was in place by the present proposals that are on the board right now, it is only 80% effective. 80% effective. Now, does that really make sense? If 20% of the nuclear warheads that are able to penetrate through the three level—it's actually three layers in the SDI. The first layer, you know, can get the satellites, the missiles that are coming down the top. And the second layer says, "Well, did anything slip through the first layer and get those?" And then there's a ground layer that says, well, it slipped through the first two layers and now I can get to the third layer. Still, 20% of the nuclear warheads would still hit the Earth.
So that's an expected failure rate?
That's an expected failure rate.
Yeah, whether it's 100 warheads falling or 100,000 warheads.
If it's 100, for example, yeah, if it's 100 warheads, you would expect 20% still to make it to Earth. And 80% would be.
Now, what does that say?
You tell me.
That we're not perfect. No matter what we think of, to take the place of God's spirit. What about?
No, I haven't. But I will mention some of that. For example, the MX project, or missile experiment project.
Very quickly, one cruise missile is about 100 times the power of the bomb that they drop on Japan.
100 times? I think it's much more than that. It's much more than that now. Much more.
Well, the cruise is small.
Yeah.
That's one of the small ones.
Right. That's one of the.
But we do have small bombs. We have backpack nukes now that can be carried in someone's back and placed.
Some of them, and most of them can do, yeah, most of them can slip through radar. Most of them can slip through radar. But the main thing I'm trying to get across is why take old habits into space.
That's true.
I'd say if we spent that much money on feeding people, we wouldn't be afraid of what someone might do to us. We're only afraid because of our guilt of not doing what we could do.
I mean, you know, how does that make you feel that this whole project will be under the testing phase in 1993.
I actually wonder about whether successive administrations can really support that. I mean, there hasn't been anything that we've kept on for that long. I am quite actually, whether it will work or not, you know, I've had a lot of thoughts about whether it's justified or not. I've had lots of thoughts about one of my questions is, can we actually do it in person? I don't think we can.
But how many
in that short of a period of time?
Yeah, but even if it's a long period of time, I don't see how successive administrations and political systems can maintain the interest and the push for it.
Why not? They kept up the space race.
But that wasn't for defensive reasons.
Or so we thought in the beginning. Mm-hmm.
It was advance for mankind, man. Great step for mankind and all that.
Yeah, how many people in the military who feel themselves as individuals, as God-fearing Christians, go to worship every Sunday with their families, are speaking up to stop that? When the bell rings and the horn blows, everybody runs to the flames and take off because they figure that's their job.
Okay. There is a whole different philosophy that a Christian philosophy within most people in the military. I don't know if you realize that. It stems a lot from very right wing religious beliefs.
And
they are protecting
LGBTQ.
What? Well, amongst most of them, in particular, those with the heaviest responsibilities, should we say, in terms of being bomber pilots and such as that, they feel as if they are protecting the American way of life.
That's why.
Very strongly. They really do.
You're
very strongly. Yeah.
And they are not less Christians. I'm just saying, defending.
They would be willing to say that if we do not, that we are not ready for our to do our job and our and what our job is, that your right to worship as you please will be taken away from you, or could be taken away from you.
So
that's their philosophy.
I have a question. This maybe slightly off the subject, but in technology, is there a, like you're saying about how complex these systems are getting?
That's right.
You know, just as a layman, it sounds like a fairly complex system. Is there any kind of principle that when you're designing systems like this, that if the complexity gets kind of, it starts to multiply or compound, is that good, or is it, do you think about that? Is that a question?
Well, I have another story. I love stories. I love stories. Were you aware that World War III almost started about 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Due to
computer
the
glitch.
That's right.
Tell us a story, Marcus.
World War III almost started about 3 years ago. Three, 4 years ago. Well, what happened was is that this computer, there was I don't know how much, about 79-cent chip that had burned up and gone bad and had given false indications and put everyone on alert.
You mean like in the movies that we see?
Yes, like in the movies. Just like in the movies.
So, I mean, that's something like the China Syndrome. Yes. Something bad happens. It puts a movie out, right?
Why did World War III start?
They were the human... We were able to correct for it. Okay. Be aware that, say, hey, this is not right. Our computers are not telling us what really happened. And everyone was on alert status. But then we defaulted back, the story goes, defaulted back down to older technology in order to verify that this wasn't happening.
I have a friend in the, he hasn't been in the Coast Guard now, but said studies, over the years they've had test runs with the Air Force pilots to push the buttons in the Navy, same way. So they had one practice test, unannounced. And they came in and said, this is it, go to your stations. And the lieutenants or captains on duty looked at each other and said, wait a minute, there's no reason to do this. And they kept pushing, they wouldn't push the buttons. These are our military men that we're so feared of. And when you have that kind of reason, and they have every reason to think that the military men in Russia have the same type of thinking, that they're not ready to push the button. And it's the human people that we have faith in.
Mm-hmm.
That you hear little stories like that, and you compare that with the malfunctions of your technology, it really makes you wonder about these multi-billion dollar systems. I don't know what that variant has to do, but it restores your faith in your human values.
Oh yes, it does. Because it was human. It was a human intervention and stuff.
It said, hey, it's not computing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wonder whether, with all the technological advancement that we've made and all the energy that we put in it, we really haven't thought that perhaps we need more money or energy put into ethical training and value. I don't know, it seems like they seem to go together. If you're going to advance technologically this much in this amount of time, we talked about rate, I guess that's what triggered it. You know, the rates seem to be totally different. We seem to pour all this energy into one and the other. You know, we fight whether to hold back or to go backwards, and we're going forward, but it seems that those two have to stay pretty equal for things to stay balanced and to have that human factor in there to not.
Getting back to basics, what are we really doing? You know, I mean, we'd mentioned some of the technical obstacles. Well, one technical obstacle in SDI is that there's only a 1 second leeway time. Only a 1 second time. And that's been giving some folks concern. There's only 1 second. But that is how it sits on the board today.
Is there any way to fully test the system without actually having Russians shoot a few missiles at us?
Shoot her own at it. Yep.
Think of the thousands and millions of dollars that you use up while you're doing that. It's a very expensive process.
But up until the system actually is called upon to work as it should, you really don't know whether it's going to work. Is that correct?
Yeah, you don't really know.
And there's lots and lots of scientists, aren't there, that are well respected that don't believe that it can work.
That's right.
Yeah, that's happened in, you know, some of us live in California, where STAR was the first initiated. And one scientist who brought up the idea had been found out and charged with falsifying his reports of what actually is feasible and what's actually not feasible. And now the scientist that was working on it is now overglaring percentage of those same scientists that's going against the one who originated the idea in the first place. And we live 20 miles from Concord Naval Weapons Station, which a lot of these missiles are housed. And all you have to do is have one of those missiles blow up in the silo, taken off, and that's going to take the whole northern part of the state of California with it.
I don't believe there are any nuclear items at Concord that I've heard of.
Concord Naval Weapons Station store nuclear. Nuclear warheads for submarines.
Yeah, but I believe those missiles are extremely old, and they've been there from like the 50s
exactly
and the 60s.
Exactly what I'm saying. You try to put one of them in the air, and it's likely to go off before
that. I don't think they plan to put them in the air, though. But they have no place else to put them at this point.
That's part of the recycling program.
Quite an old about Concord, I guess. I'm not involved in weapons.
You're in biology, right?
I work in a hospital.
Yeah.
I just read a lot.
Well, we have a lot of friends who are in this thing.
Yeah, we have friends who are
wrestling with this issue.
Yeah, I have many friends that decided that they would start working for
something else to do.
Something else. Mm-hmm. But the question really is, if we have the technology, should we do it?
That's right.
And how much enough is enough? I keep thinking, you know, How much is the technology?
It is scary, and the military intelligence reports that the Russians are already working out both defenses, similar defenses, and ways to beat ours. They're already doing it. We're already off the ground, and they're already in active research. I mean, the amount of money they spend on military research compared to ours is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have.
I don't know if this is not an answer to anything, but there was a work weekend here at Holden last March on basically ministry in the workplace, and got into our dealing with the military and how our defense industry, and it's reported in this accent thing here. And one of the leaders was a weapons analyst kind of person, went into the war and all that stuff, and went to seminary, but went out of the seminary and chose to go back into the field. And he said he got back into it as a thing as to help make it a little less stupid. He points out that there, because weapons are going to be built anyway, no matter what, you may as well have a Christian in that missile silo.
A Christian?
Well,
that's interesting.
If it won't go away, if the weapons are going to be built, this is what he says anyway, let's build things that reduce the conflict, de-escalate it, build them to slow it down and give people time to think. To ensure that the defense de-escalation theme is prominent. I don't know.
Which
one point?
I can kind of see that point. And because if you're just talking to yourself and people that believe as you do, mm-hmm. you escalate at a much faster rate than if you have somebody shooting at your thoughts.
He said, yeah, there's an analogy of a school bus describing his position as a Christian in the defense industry. If you see a school bus rolling down the hill, out of control, full of children with no driver, what do? Some people jump in front of the bus and wave and get flattened. Other people jump into the bus and use the brakes, and the brakes don't work. Steer it safely.
This is saying the road food, but that was
Steve Boyd.
Yeah. Oh, I know Steve. He said that, huh?
Does that sound like him?
Yes. But he's done some very interesting things in his life.
Okay.
And they mortgaged their house and other things to get some Guatemalan refugees out of jail that had been, you know, put in jail with no proper reason, and that sort of thing. So he's a real, you may not agree with him, but he's trying according to his lights.
Mm-hmm. His last statement here is, who's responsible to prevent war and dying? You know,
mm-hmm.
We all do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that he is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I'm not condemning technology, but you know, it's what we do.
You know, it's interesting how technology gives birth to the things that cause this construction. When it's the same things that they use in searching for the good of mankind, see the power that it has to destroy, and rapes that side of it, as opposed to raping the side of the technology that could do the good for mankind.
In fact, what you were saying about the weapons, that weapons will be built, yeah, I believe it's part of human nature to build weapons, and if we had hot butter, we would pour it on each other.
Guns and butter. Wait a minute. He said that.
No, then we have rice now.
Please don't talk about hot butter fight.
You know, in the early days of Africa, before it started being colonized, the way that African nations warred against each other was they painted themselves up and took their spears and shields and instruments that we may call warfare and charged each other yelling and screaming, but the object of the game was to frighten the other person away. And they always left an escape route so that person had a choice not to succumb defeat with humiliation. Now that has escalated from frightening to actually killing. And that's frightening.
Well, I think the dilemma that I often feel is, it seems like we're always concerned about Russia. I mean, what is it? How much of a threat is Russia, and or whatever other country? You know, how will we ever know? Do we really know? I mean, we're sort of pleased about Gorbachev's openness. How do you say the word?
Glasnost,
and the other word. And you know, there's a lot of encouragement with that. And then you hear, but that is a kind of facade, that the basic philosophy. I think, if whoever it is decides on doing all of this, a lot of it is this power thing between two major countries, and
the heads of state.
Right. Yeah. And I think people in some people are more frightened. Like, don't you think when you get in conversation, some people are really freaked about Russians, and others are not. You know, just like in this room, I'm sure we could kind of have a difference of opinion about how afraid are we of Russia, the leaders, I'm sure the people. And will we ever know how much we have to defend ourselves against either Russia or another? And I must admit that I have a relative who is very sure that Russia, communism, whole goal in life is to take over the world. I mean, that is their test, or it's almost like a religion for ours, if it would be to tell about Jesus Christ, theirs is, and I'm not sure I believe that, but how do we know what to believe about Russian intent is? Mm-hmm.
Look at the children.
Of Russia.
Look at the children of Russia and look at the children of the United States.
Yeah.
Okay? When those two people meet, they're not talking about who's going to overthrow who. They just want to experience one another's culture.
And I think, why don't we spend the money to get the people going back and forth?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay, can Rush make the dinner bill? This is a good book, The Prometheus Project. Prometheus is really to defend us against the gods. It really is healing against ourselves.